BGB, good stuff. Hello, listeners.
Hi.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
I'm Matthew Craig.
We're brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this episode is specifically a Good Stuffs episode, where we like to take the time to just talk about anything gaming related, anything that we're interested in that we'd like to share with you.
Yeah, we play a lot of games outside the ones we talk about on our podcast.
You know, we only talk about three or four every week.
Every month.
And we, one every week, and we play more games than that, and there's more other things game-related to talk about, so...
Yeah.
So this is our platform to talk about anything we want, really.
This is our August 1st episode for this year, and... It's kind of funny because we're right before Gen Con, but right ahead of San Diego Comic Con. So, like, most of the board game news is kind of, I'm pretty sure, scheduled for Gen Con, it seems like.
Yeah, but there's still some things to talk about.
Oh, yeah, there's still some stuff.
For this month, and everything that comes out in Gen Con, we could talk about that next month in that Good Stuffs episode. So what should we start with? What should we start talking about?
There is one major event that also happened, which was the Spiel des Jahres.
Oh, of course. Yeah. We always mention, whenever we review a game, whether it's won a Spiel des Jahres award or a Kenner Spiel award, which is Spiel des Jahres is more like a family friendly or fun for the all ages type of award.
It's like a game of the year award.
It is, but there's sort of like this, the fun for the all ages is kind of an aspect
to it. A family game.
Where, well, I don't know if you'd say family game, but rather fun for the all ages. I don't know. You get what we're saying.
Yeah.
And then Kenner Spiel is like a game of the year, but for a more higher difficulty level. So that was recently. And there are some award winners.
Yeah.
So, Matthew, who won the Spiel des Jahres?
Spiel is, I think, one that a lot of people expected. It was Azul, a sort of mosaic tile placement game with tile drafting elements.
Very cool. And then
Kenner Spiel.
The Kenner Spiel, and I get to say this funny name. It's German. It's, and I'm going to butcher this. It's Die Quacksalber von Kedlinburg, which is potion ingredients from a bag, and you assemble them to craft the perfect potion, which you then can sell to craft more potions. Both of these games are pretty interesting. Azul's been on our radar for a while now, but the Charlatans of Kedlinburg, I hadn't really heard much about it before this.
I'm pretty sure it was, like, I don't think it's been in America until recently.
Yeah, I don't believe so.
If at all.
So we'll have to look, and you know, there was another game, I think it was a nominee for Kenner Spiel, was Heaven and Ale, and that's a game I'd seen around lately, and that's an interesting game. So that was nominated. It didn't win, but getting a nomination is still kind of good, because like three games get nominated.
Three or four,
year.
Yeah.
So it's a short list of games. You know, I think last year, Terraforming Mars was nominated, I believe.
Yeah, last year had a lot of good nominations.
Terraforming Mars is a game we've been playing a lot of lately to sort of blend into that games we've been playing.
Oh, yeah.
We played a couple of games of Terraforming Mars. That's a very cool game.
I've enjoyed it a lot. I think I've said this before, that I really like these, like, concise engine building games that reward sort of constructing a fair engine, you know, a really close engine that gets the job done. So, you know, Food Chain Magnate is one I really like, and Terraforming Mars fits right in.
Yeah, so I guess congratulations to those two games. Very cool. And we hope to talk about them on a future episode sometime this year, hopefully. So what other board game news do we have? I have one piece of news that's very exciting for me personally, and probably you, and that's there is a board game being kickstarted right now, which is the Trogdor board game.
Oh, yeah.
Trogdor the board game, which is based on the Homestar Runner dragon character from their old fake video game, Trogdor.
I'm pretty sure it started in a Strong Bad email.
That's right. It started in a Strong Bad email just asking, how do you draw a dragon, right?
Yeah.
So Trogdor, the character from Homestar Runner, is getting his very own board game. And it looks to be kind of like the opposite of Forbidden Island.
Yeah.
Where instead of being survivors who are trying to keep the island from sinking by flipping the tiles to their face upside, you play cooperatively as Trogdor in the Trogdor game.
Well, it's like followers of Trogdor who want Trogdor to burninate the countryside.
Exactly. You want the territories to be flipped over to their face downside, which is burninated. And it seems like an interesting game where players play cards that kind of dictate the directions that Trogdor will move on his turn, and you want to kind of line up combos where Trogdor is burninating things so that those things will catch other things on fire. And then the opposition in the game are these like powerful knights that will show up at different parts to try and stop Trogdor. So that it looks like a fun cooperative game. The Kickstarter, as of this recording, as of tomorrow, the Kickstarter will have 13 days remaining to back it, and I aim to back it very soon. I haven't backed it yet, but yeah, I want a copy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just can't decide if I want, like, what is it called? Like, the weenie version or something? It's
it has pretty interesting tier names.
Yeah, yeah. So I've been thinking about, you know, that or the higher tier version. But either way, that's very cool.
Yeah.
I think also recent news.
Yeah, Wizards of the Coast announced a Dungeons & Dragons supplemental book featuring Ravnica from Magic the Gathering.
Right, so they've been doing this. Wizards has been doing this for the planes that they've been going to. They release a small supplemental book or book.
It's like almost a PDF.
Yeah.
It's their plane shift.
Right, right.
And I think they started with Battle for Zendikar.
Yes. And it includes, you know, names of locations in the world. Every now and then it'll include stat blocks. The most recent set was Dominaria that they created one of these little splat PDFs for that included some stats on the monsters of Dominaria and some playable races from Dominaria. But this D&D Ravnica book is looking like a much larger product than anything that's come before.
It seems like any of the other D&D settings, like Curse of Strahd or, you know, all those things, where it has not only details about the world and stat blocks, but maybe other, like, items or extra info. I think the biggest thing I'm interested in is how the book will, like, portray the colors of Magic in terms of alignment. Because in Magic, oftentimes the different colors of mana are used in a similar context, where, like, it's sort of like a personality and character drive.
Right.
And all that sort and of it's aspect. Sort of,
in Magic, they have five colors. Yeah. And so there's sort of five personality traits that are played up and blended with other personality traits.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting that Ravnica is a plane that is focused around pairs of these colors.
Right, so which you could sort of consider it as 10 sort of... There's 10 factions.
Yeah.
10 sort of ideals. Or, you know...
And I would hope that they explain to the players how the players can, focus their own color identity. Mm-hmm.
Although that said, alignment plays a much more subdued role in 5th edition, in D&D 5th edition, compared to previous editions and other role-playing games. It's not really a mechanical feature.
I think there's some paladin and cleric stuff, though.
Well, the spell Detect Evil, or Protection from Evil, rather, doesn't actually protect against things with evil alignment.
Oh, okay.
It protects against evil things.
Okay.
Sort of like that. Yeah. So it's the actual alignment of a being, I think, in D&D 5th edition does not really come up that often. So maybe this set will follow along with that. I don't know. It'll certainly be interesting.
Even
to
just
see.
For player reasons.
Yeah.
Or for flavor reasons, you know, world building and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll be cool to see everything that goes into this book. It's the Wingling level.
Oh, yeah,
the lowest level for Trogdor. And then, of course, the level above that is the Burninator level. Now, there's another thing which is pretty cool, which is sort of related to our podcast in a way, and that is that Millennium Blades is coming out with a digital version of their game. So this is sort of a trend with...
They actually, Level 99 recently released Battlecon Online for, like, the open beta, and they've been working on Pixel Tactics Online.
Mm-hmm.
So, they're going into the next one, I guess.
Yeah. So, wait, did I get that right? Millennium Blades? Or, no, I am thinking of Battlecon.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah.
Sorry, Millennium Blades is wrong. Yeah. Ignore I said that. But they're doing BattleCon.
Okay, yeah.
Which, either way, I mean, we did an episode on BattleCon. One thing that we talked about is that you mentioned, at least, is that you very much enjoy playing it, but it takes a great deal of investment, like, up front to play the game as a player, because you have to very quickly understand, you know, what your character does and the kind of fighting style you do and what your opponent does. And that's very important because a lot of the game is about reading your opponent mm-hmm. and counterplaying your opponent. So I think what the digital version of BattleCon does is it gives everyone who likes playing the game but can never find that commitment in their friends, in their immediate play group, to play it online. And yeah. it's a really great game. It's interesting that it's like one of those, it's one of the games that you can play online that has zero RNG, because it's entirely decided by you, the player, and your opponent, the outcome of a game. So it's interesting. And we talked about it. And that's board game news.
Yeah. All right. Recent plays.
So we played Terraforming Mars. We also have recently played, and this is, I guess, a spoiler. So anybody listening to the episode now, this is a spoiler for our next episode, which is we've been playing a lot of Concordia.
Yeah. Lately,
which is it's a German. A board game. It's a Euro game.
It's trading goods and resources in the Mediterranean.
Yeah, it's like the Euroest Euro game you can ever make, where you control a group of people in Rome, and you're attempting to amass resources and gold so that you can add people to your to your faction or whatever, to your group. Spread your build buildings and cities to increase your trading powers, and in the end you're trying to appease the Roman gods by how how industrious you were throughout the game.
Yeah.
It's the most Euro game there is, and we're gonna talk about that next episode.
The main thing I want to say now, just outside of the episode coming up, I think it's the first game I've played where I have felt that three players is the best player count.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Usually I'm either two or
yeah,
more.
I guess I can see that. And we'll go into why that is. Yeah. A little something to hang on to keep you hanging on.
Cliffhanger, yeah.
Yeah, cliffhanger. Why is it better with three players, I wonder? Yeah, we'll see. But I've been having a lot of fun playing that lately. I like the game because, to put it simply, the strategies are very vague and unapparent to me, at least at this point playing the game. I'm getting a little bit better at the game, but even still, it seems like sometimes it feels like it could be anyone's game. Because it feels like there's a great opportunity for players to influence other players. You know, it being a Euro game, there's a lot of indirect competition, but it seems like you really butt up against one another a lot in this game, more than any other. So I'm excited to talk about that next time.
Yeah,
we play, or next episode. We just finished a session of Charterstone.
Yeah, I think we have one session left.
Yep, we absolutely only have one session left, because we have filled up the story portion. So in Charterstone, it's a legacy game, which means you're adding stickers to everything and writing in things with Sharpies, and you're playing multiple play sessions. So we just finished a play session, and we have filled up the back of the book where you fill up all the story stickers, which you place one at the end of every session to sort of note what you did that session.
Yeah, there's like a slight narrative going on.
Yeah, so it just filled up at the end of this last game, and the prompt that we have for our next game says that it's basically the last one. It basically says we have one more session, and then we find out who won the whole thing. And Charterstone's been a really great game.
Oh yeah,
we did an episode on it,
and we're
earlier.
Going to do another one.
Yep, we said we'd do the part two, because when we did part one, we felt we were about halfway through it, and I think looking back now, we were pretty much dead on halfway through the game, and a lot of interesting stuff has happened in the game since then. Some really weird stuff has happened.
Yeah.
And we're very excited to talk about everything and give the game its final review to take it on home.
Yeah.
What else have we been playing?
Let's see. That's, I think, the most of the board games I've been playing.
We played... Actually, I don't know. Have you actually sat down and played Bunny Kingdom yet? Since we... Okay. We got a copy of Bunny Kingdom recently, and we've played that a couple times. We talked about that in our Geekway episode from this year. And
I'm pretty much the same on it. That it's fun, but it can be hard to read the board at times.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, yeah. Yeah, it can be a little hard to... The board gets hectic. But, yeah, I like the game just because I like drafting as a mechanic. This is one of the more interesting drafting games that's come out recently. You know, since, yeah, I don't know, Seven Wonders. Because drafting is the mechanic to the game, really. And it has... And I'm just a big fan of it, so I like what it does. And we'll get into that in the future, I'm sure, in its own episode. Let's see. We've been playing a lot of Werewords.
Yeah, that's also
we mentioned that still in Geekway, a good party game. That one continues to excite, and yeah.
It's a really good game to get people who otherwise don't touch board games.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not a board game. It's a great party game.
I mean, anybody can understand 20 questions.
Right. And it's more active than like just regular Werewolf, which is a lot of going to bed, waking up, pointing at somebody, going to bed, everyone wake up, who do you think is the werewolf? You know, there's like a little bit of debate. You know, it takes the focus out of the debate and the having to defend yourself and all that, and puts a lot of it into 20 questions. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. I love 20 questions, and this game uses it really well as an interesting mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
Makes you make interesting decisions. And I played it with the minimum number of players, which is 4, and it's still functional, which is cool. And when you're playing with 4, there's an even greater chance that the mayor could be the werewolf or the seer in the game. And if you don't know what that means, then... actually, I won't make you go back and listen to the Geekway episode, because it was long, and I can't remember when exactly we talked. But it's Werewolf 20 questions. There's a mayor who runs the game. The mayor picks the word and gives the yes or no answers to the 20 questions. The seer knows the word and is attempting to help the villagers guess what the word is. The werewolf is trying to thwart them, because if the villagers guess the word, then it is on the werewolf to figure out who the seer was. If they cannot, then the werewolf loses. And then if the word is not guessed, then it is everyone's job to figure out who the werewolf was. And if they cannot guess who the werewolf was, then the werewolf wins. Anyways, with 4 players, sometimes, more often than not, the mayor who gets a secret role is also a werewolf or a seer. It's funny when the mayor is the seer, because then it's just a total toss-up 20 questions for anybody, I guess, except the werewolf. When the mayor is the werewolf, it's interesting, because technically the mayor can give incorrect answers to the 20 questions. At the end of the game, it's still, the word is revealed to everyone, so that everyone will know whether or not the mayor was honest. But I was the mayor as the werewolf, and I just picked a really complicated word. And it made the game hard enough where nobody knew who the werewolf could have been, because I gave the right answers for a complicated word. The word was just complicated. Nobody guessed it, and it was hard to determine who the werewolf was. So it was fun. It's a fun game.
Yeah.
Any other board games can we think of?
Not particularly.
All right. Any other game-related things you want to talk about?
There's some video game stuff.
Okay.
So I probably have talked about a different platform fighter video game for like a couple episodes now, but there is a one that came out recently that is really interesting. So platform fighters are the type of like video game where it's a fighting game, you know, direct competition, direct attacks or whatever, but with a more of a platformer style movement. So, you know, running, jumping, all that is a lot easier and sometimes faster than most fighting games will have, and the stages are usually much more dynamic. And this particular game is called Indie Pogo. It is a platform fighter with mechanics kind of similar to Smash Bros., except that you automatically bounce when you hit the ground. There's like a brief moment in time where you're kind of squatting on the ground, but afterwards you immediately jump up. and every character can deal damage to an opponent by jumping on the opponent's head.
Okay.
So it ends up playing out in a very more aerial-focused way, because when you jump off somebody's head, you can double jump again, even if you already used a double jump, and you can air dodge again in the same way. And if you jump off enough heads before touching the ground, you get, like, super meter that builds up to do a super attack. And the characters are all characters from different indie games. There's some ones that I'd never heard of before, and then there are some, like, more flagship characters. So, like, Shovel Knight, Commander Video from Bit Trip, and, Captain Viridian from VVVVVV. So, it's a really interesting game. I think it's one of the more interesting design platform fighters, just because, due to the fact that it's much more air-focused, everything plays differently than normal.
Mm-hmm. It sounds a lot like Dive Kick, but, like,
sort of, but
greater depth
in a different
it.
Way, yeah.
Yeah.
And Dive Kick was, of course, a fighting game where every character could jump and then do a dive kick from midair.
And that was basically
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Each character just had a slightly different type of kick or and jump.
A few unique moves.
Yeah. But the unique moves were all centered around, like, a different way to kick, sort of.
Or to move.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It sounds like that. It's kind of interesting, this idea of, like, a fighter, a platform
a
fighter.
A minimalist.
With, like,
well, yeah.
A minimalist or, like, with, like, heavy limitations like that, but still taken very seriously.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indie Pogo is really good, yeah.
We could always talk about the new Magic set, because, it's...
Magic 2019 core set.
Magic 2019 core set. I've done two drafts of it now, as well as the limited release of it, and I think I've seen a draft of it in a tournament, and blue-green seems to do really well. It seems like card draw is very good in this set. It seems like the games go pretty late. There's not as much early game aggression in this set. You know, like, some of the most sought after cards are like a 1/1 flyer for 3 that draws you a card. It's just like, it seems like a lot of the good cards. Sift is very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so, that it feels like the individual creatures aren't as efficient as in previous sets.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to keep card advantage.
Mm-hmm.
In toughness, it seems to be usually pretty low.
Yeah, yeah. I've noticed there's a lot of creatures in the set. There's, like, 2 red creatures at uncommon and rare that have... Or no, I think they're both at uncommon that have, like, 3 toughness, but, like, a large amount of power. There's other red creatures that follow that. There's, like, an ogre that's a 4/2. There's the devils that are 4/3. There's a zombie that's a 4/2 with menace. Yeah, there's a lot of low toughness, high power creatures that are just going to get traded away oftentimes in this set. So it seems like, yeah, card advantage is a really big deal in limited in this set. I've had fun both times I've drafted it.
It's interesting, yeah.
It's interesting. And there's a lot of weird artifacts in the set, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
but there's not many at common or uncommon, feels like.
Well, it seems, yeah, they're mostly rare. The Transmogrifying Wand and the Chaos Wand are both interesting cards that don't really do much. There's Magistrate Scepter or something
That lets you take an extra turn. If you get enough counters.
That one's not really playable in limited. But there is the Tome that just draws cards.
Yeah.
It's the 3 mana... And then pay 3, tap, draw a card. That one's very strong, it seems. Yeah, so, I don't know. If you want draft tips, play card advantage, play late game. There's a lot of really good late game threats in the set, like at Uncommon. And there's Horizon Scholar, 4/4 Scry 2, Sphinx for 6.
In green, there's that, like, 7/6 trample that can block an additional creature.
Yeah, it's a 7/7.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about the twin...
Twin Bark Guardians or whatever. Guardians,
something like that. Yeah, that's very good. And there's always Colossal Dreadmaw.
Oh,
there's there's Sparktongue Dragon.
Yeah.
Which is the 3/3 flyer for 5, but you can kick it for 3 more to deal 3 damage to any target, I believe. That's very good. To take out, you know, those low toughness creatures.
There's a good amount
of... both Shock and Lightning Strike, and...
there's that Pyromancer.
Yeah.
That when it enters the... And when it comes into play, it deals 2 to an opponent or planeswalker.
Viashino Pyromancer. Yeah, but that's only a 2/1. I've been unimpressed with red and black in this set. Very impressed with blue and green in this set.
It's kind of so disappointing, honestly, because I usually like playing red or black based fast decks.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I do like a fast deck. More often than not, I've drafted fast decks whenever I play. Like, oftentimes in Dominaria, I would draft, like, a white-red equipment deck or a white-red aggro deck or a blue-red mage aggro deck. Wizard aggro deck, I should say. And then in sets before that, I would often draft, like, red as one of my colors for just a very aggressive deck. Or black in Amonkhet, because black was a very aggressive color. But yeah, it seems like this kind of slowed it down draft-wise, which I think when you go back and watch, like, pro drafts of older, of, like, the previous few sets, it seems like aggro is always, like, at the top as one of the highest, highest placing archetypes in draft. So, I don't know, it's kind of cool to have this draft where it feels, like, a lot slower. Making more interesting decisions. Maybe even, like, counter spells are a little better in this set than just removal.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people say Essence Scatter is really good right now and limited.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a sensor.
Yeah.
But maybe even better, given that a lot of the creatures that you would want to counter are, like, four drops, which is a big trade, and those four drops are things like Rocks Oracle, which is a five drop, I guess, which draws you a card or something like that, or the five drop Merfolk that returns a spell from your graveyard to your hand. Or I guess Gravedigger too is a four drop.
There's a lot,
plenty of four drops that you'd like love to counter just to get that card advantage. And I mean, countering them, it's like anti card advantage because all these like card advantage cards,
right?
Okay, is there anything else you want to talk about?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah, I think I'm good too.
All right.
I think that's about kind of a shorter Good Stuffs episode to follow up that kind of shorter episode on Geekway 2017. I'm feeling way better for this next episode coming up, which will be Concordia. So thank you for listening to our Good Stuffs episode.
Yep.
If you would like to, you can follow us on social media and on podcasting apps. On social media, you can find us at BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter. You can follow us, leave us a comment, shout us out, whatever you want. We appreciate it. You can also find everything, all our episodes on our website, bgbcast.com, where we post all our episodes. We tag them so that you can search for an episode where we talk about a game that you're interested in hearing about on that website. And if you're also just in the market for URLs to paste into your web browser, you can go ahead and put in entertainthegeeky.com/gear. That is where we sell our very own Board Game Bros merchandise, which is at the moment a t-shirt or a pair of t-shirts. So you can check that out. Rep our merch if you'd like. That's very cool. We're in conversation with the printers now, make sure that orders get filled. We know we personally have some shirts in what's the word?
Limbo?
In limbo. Yeah, in limbo. But we hope to get that sorted out very soon. EntertainTheGeeky.com is where our friends Chris, Roger, and Jason host their podcast. You can check those out if you'd like. And it's also where you can find our one-page role-playing game, Rolls Truck Stop in Maine, perfect for the merry month of August, which it is now that month. And as always, keep an ear open for our Kickstarter. It's a Kickstarter that we're going to use to launch our board game production company, as well as print our very first card game, Conniving Cooks.
A 2-6 player bluffing and deduction card game in which players take the role of cooks in a fancy restaurant, attempting to get each other fired while also making sure the guests get their food on time.
Mm-hmm. So keep an ear out for that, and thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Concordia
this Saturday.
Thank you for listening.